that it's like at one space, because all that moving around and stuff did take up a lot of energy, real estate on my end with the logistics and
stuff. Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, I love being in the same place. My daughter's looking forward to going to she calls it the Ojibwe school, because everybody in her class are Ojibwe. She says Ojibwe. So every Indian.
So cute.
She's like, because her friends are, you know, she's like one of the only Native kid at her school. So she's like, I can't wait to go to my Ojibwe school.
Oh, that's so sweet. Yeah, I remember when I saw you when we pulled up the last time in the parking lot, and your daughter, she's so cute. She's like, Mom, is she Native too?
Yeah. Is she Ojibwe? It's cute.
Yeah.
It's like, aww. Yes, you're going to be around Ojibwe. I was trying to tell her, I was like, you're going to clean a hide today. Do you know what that, or this weekend, do you know what that means? I didn't want to scare her. There's going to be a dead animal spread across the floor, and you're going to clean it.
Yeah. But that's what they're doing?
Yeah. She's like, bring some clothes. Because they're bringing bear. I guess she's like, bring some clothes that you don't mind getting greasy. So they're bringing bear grease, and they're going to finish the hide with bear grease and everything. So.
Wow, how cool is that?
I know. I was like, can we do that too?
I know. Like, I didn't, like you were saying, like, the so many cool opportunities we get to have, like, even just, you know, as an auntie and seeing my nieces and nephews and, you know, littles, like, what they get to do, like, your daughter, like,
mm-hmm.
I don't think I got to do anything like that when I was her age, you know,
right.
And so I didn't, you know, I grew up here in the cities. I'm an urban Indian, so I didn't grow up on the res, where I think, like, you know, if you have more of those teachings on, you know, closer on the res and stuff.
Yeah.
Then maybe you got to, that's more like normal for you, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I think we're so fortunate. Even sometimes, like, when I would visit the res, some of those folks didn't even really get to do the stuff that we're doing, because it's so, we're so, I think we're, like, not overcompensating, but, like, because of the land base that we don't have, it's like we're always really constantly figuring out how to help our community get in touch with some of the cultural activities. Mm-hmm. Because it's, you know, I've never been ricing before. I would love to go ricing, but I'm pretty sure there's someone in the city that could connect me with, you know, someone to go ricing. My mom would go ricing. She was telling me, she's like, she didn't like the spiders, because there's spiders, and that's all she remembered. Like, that's all she talked about was, like, all the spiders were everywhere.
The but freaks. It's Uncle Me everywhere.
He's crawling on me. It's so
funny.
But that, yeah, I would love to do that.
Yeah, I haven't gone yet to do that either. And yeah, it seems like it's a lot of work, but
yeah,
well worth it. And the spiders are just your mom's spirit helpers, that's all.
A whole bunch of them. She's like, they were everywhere.
They're there to help you, Mom. Those are your spirit helpers.
Oh, that's funny. But I really enjoyed our talk. We're actually to our hour. Can you believe that?
No.
We're done. Oh, we're done. Just cut your
head. We're done.
It's over.
Shut it down.
But thank you so much. I really appreciate you hanging out with me and taking the time to just talk about how you heal, and, like, just your philosophy on being an urban Indian. And I look forward to just learning more about you and connecting more during our Oyate Leadership Network journey.
Oh, yeah.
Oh. Oh, yeah. Thank you so much. Take care, Gigawabaman. You're listening to Medicine Bundle.
what that is.
Fresh Air Community Radio is KFAI-FM, Minneapolis-St. Paul. Online and archived at KFAI.org. The community's true voice.
The viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them and are not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.
What's up? This is Toolman.
And this is Bear Witness.
And we are the Hallucination.
And you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, Best Of.
The Hallucination.
It's a good day to be indigenous. Get up,
stand up. They are going to become more brutal.
Couldn't cut, any cut again.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade. A kudigi to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. Hey, we discuss local, national, Native news and events. And as you know, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues. Hey, I want to really thank our guest, Rachel Dion Thunder, for coming on. And she is with the Indigenous Protectors Movement, and really always great to have you on. You've been, you've been on the show maybe the last 5 years. It's just great to see you.
Yeah, I think it has been about 5 years, Robert. Thanks for having me on. I'm a little bit tired, just full transparency. I was on, took the interns out from IPM today to the Navy Walk that IPTF and Sharon Day do every year, and so we were out walking and running today for the water, but it was beautiful. It was really nice to be out there.
Wow. That's awesome. And that's another big Pini Gigi. Thank you for coming on, for being tired. You're always a great guest, and we, you know, and I would really love if you could tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and Indigenous Protectors Movement.
Sure. You know, where do I start? So my name is Rachel Tonse. I am Big Stone Cree Nation, Plains Cree, Nihio, Nihiwak, Treaty 8. Currently live here in South Minneapolis, American Indian Movement, second generation, and, you know, one of the co-founders and now vice president of the Indigenous Protector Movement. And so the Indigenous Protector Movement is a Indigenous-based org here in South Minneapolis that myself, my husband, Vinny Dion, Crow Belcourt, Jolene Jones, and Nick Estes started back in 2023. So we're pretty new. You know, and what we really saw was this niche in community that wasn't being met. And when I talk about this niche, I mean this in like resources for Indigenous activism, right? And so like traditionally in the past, there were entities here that were functioning at a high capacity, like the American Indian Movement. And, you know, things have just dwindled down over time. And we saw this need to, you know, start something new and fresh while also honoring, you know, the past and the history and all the sacrifices and also carrying that name on. And so that's why we started IPM. And, you know, we've been pretty busy since the jump. You know, I think that a lot of the listeners probably know about Mini Shields. That's one of our programs that we do sponsor here in South Minneapolis. And so that's all Native Indigenous men, you know, finding a traditional role and purpose in a modern setting, and, you know, helping protect and keep our community safe, and also growing and healing as men. You know, I was listening to one of the commercials as we were coming on, and it made me think about, you know, the work that we need to do in healing each other, you know, holding each other accountable. And so that's like that brotherhood that started with Mini Shields. And then we have kind of like the sister program called the Women's Warrior Society, that we also run, and we meet every other Tuesday. We're actually going to have a meeting tomorrow night where we're going to be planning a smudge walk coming up. And so just invite all of our Native Indigenous sisters to come join us. It's from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Minneapolis American Indian Center. And so we're going to have that tomorrow night. We serve food and just spend time together, you know, and plan. Sometimes we do self-defense classes. We've done Narcan trainings. We have a CPR training coming up. And so the thinking is, you know, to empower our women and community to not only to protect themselves, but to protect their children, their families, and if they need to, their community. And we want to empower them in order to do that, you know, to feel safer, to feel stronger, to have that sisterhood built here in South Minneapolis. You know, a lot of natives come here from like reservations, and they're looking for community. And that's a big part of what we do at IPM is community building, you know, building our community stronger, because we are an action and advocacy based organization. But if our community is not strong and healed, how can we expect our people to respond when these issues pop up? Right.
Yeah. Wow, exactly.
So we have to focus on healing this multi-generational trauma, and we need to shift that mindset to multi-generational healing. We need our people to be sober. We can't just expect to continue to survive. We need to shift into a thriving mindset.
It's amazing what you mentioned too. I heard through Minneapolis Public Schools that there's over 150 different tribes recognized here in Minneapolis specifically, and also 75,000 Native Americans in the Twin City area, making it the biggest urban Native community in the country. People looking for what you say and finding it in, you know, with Indigenous Protectors Movement and also the other groups. I see what you're doing, and people see what you're doing, and I love to be able to be on with you and amplify your great work, even if you are a little tired. Oh, wow.
that's why I still came on, you know, because we gotta be able to, we can't just do the work. We have to also share what we're doing, right? Like, as Native people, we're taught to be humble, right? Like, be humble, you know, be humble in what you're doing. And like, we need to keep that tradition, but we also need to like be more comfortable in using our voices, you know, use your voice, speak it out, you know, into the universe, like what you're doing or what you want, you know, like you're setting that intention, and like, how are people going to know what we're doing or what they can attend or what they can go to or how they can plug in if we're not speaking it out except for our inner circle. So that's something I really advocate for.
Well, and I see on your post from your site and your personal post on social media that it's a groundswelling. There is quite a few people that are doing, you know, the Women's Warrior Society and Mini Shields. And to me, being an old person, that's really exciting to see, you know, these kind of actions come back. Like you said earlier, you know, just last week, it was 1968 when American Indian Movement started in Minneapolis, and we love talking about that. But also now with Indigenous Protectors Movement stepping in, there's hope and there's a voice, and I appreciate what you and your husband and all the members are doing.
Yeah, you know, and there's so many people, because you're right because it's not just me and it's not just my husband. Like, there are countless people out here every day, you know, that that go unnoticed, that are putting that work in. And that is really what it is to be American Indian Movement. American Indian Movement is a spirit. It's a way of life. It's a way of being. And even before it was officially founded in 1968, the American Indian Movement existed. You know, Sitting Bull was American Indian Movement. You know, all of our ancestors were American Indian Movement. American Indian Movement has existed since the beginning of colonization. It's how you choose to live your day-to-day life. It's what are you doing to better yourself, better your family, better your people, you know, to bring us into those better days, to heal our people and to ground yourself in that traditional spiritual way. And, you know, American Indian Movement did a beautiful thing. It made it really cool to be Indian again, right? Like, yeah. it was like everybody wanted to be Indian and was proud to be Indian and proud of our ways. And they did a lot of beautiful work. And now, you know, we're in a new day. It's a new time, some similar issues, but, you know, we're up against some stuff that I don't think our ancestors ever dreamed of. And we got to all come together. We got to heal. We got to get sober. We got to support each other, you know, to get through this.
Right on. Hey, we're here with Rachel Dion Thunder, Indigenous Vice President and co-founder of Indigenous Protectors Movement here in the Twin Cities and nationally. And we're going to take a quick break. This is Native Roots Radio.
To our elders who teach us of our creation and our past, so we may preserve Mother Earth for ancestors yet to come, we are the land.
This is dedicated to our relatives before us thousands of years ago and to the 150 million who were exterminated across the Western Hemisphere in the first 400 years' time, starting in 1492.
To those who have kept their homelands and to the nations extinct due to mass slaughter, slavery, deportation, and disease unknown to them, and to the ones who are subjected to the same treatment today.
To the ones who survived the relocations and the ones who died along the way.
To those who carried on traditions and lived strong among their people.
To those who left their communities by force or by choice and for generations no longer know who they are.
To those who search and never find. To those that turn away the so-called non-accepted. To those that bring us together. And to those living outside, keeping touch, the voice for many.
To those that make it back to live and fight the struggles of their people.
To those that give up and those who do not care.
To those who abuse themselves and others.
And those who revive again.
To those who are physically, mentally, or spiritually incapable by accident or by birth.
Oh-ho! This is Dallas Goldtooth, and you're listening to the Native Roots Radio. Hoka, hecha, wecha.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, welcome back, everyone. We are here with Rachel Dion Thunder, Indigenous Protectors Movement, and we're kind of talking about the history. And I'd like to get into the nuts and bolts of what you guys do. I know I see you on you know, the Woman Warrior Society and Many Shields doing work in the community. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Right. So, you know, we talked a little bit about that. So at IPM, and I really want to say that here in Minneapolis, this is a very unique setting, right? This is like a blessing with how many Native and Indigenous organizations and businesses there are here. There's not anywhere like this that is so centralized in the rest of the country, in an urban setting. And so as IPM, you know, a big part of what we do is the community building, right? Like is creating those traditional or recreating those traditional roles and purposes for our people, because a lot of our people have lost their purpose. They don't know what their role is. They don't know how to fit into this modern world that, you know, that we're being forced to live now. And so how do we create those traditional roles and purposes, but through a modern lens, right? So like, that's like with Many Shields, is creating like that warrior society, like for our men to be a part of, right? That is a big part of what we do, is community building. And then, you know, of course, like we do focus on advocacy and Indigenous issues. And And there's so many right now. There's, you know, everything that is happening with ICE and the deportation, and the backlash of like what happens to you if you stand up and you protest against it. And then there's the issues of, you know, our unhoused, our relatives that are currently, you know, without housing, without resources, our relatives that are in active addiction. How do we heal that? We're losing an entire generation to overdoses and fentanyl. How do we stop that? You know, and then you talk about community safety. Talk about when AIM Patrol was a thing. AIM Patrol was never having to go up against fully automatic guns with switches and drums on them. So how do we as a people, how do we, you know, they say like, you know, who keeps us safe? We keep us safe. Well, how do we keep us safe when you're going up against something like that? How do we as a community go up against something like that? How do we stop these drug dealers from coming into community? And so, you know, when you hear advocacy or you hear protesting or you hear rallying, like, yes, there's like these obvious issues of like current administration and ICE, but there's also these issues that are so complex. It's like, how do we as a community, as a people, stand together and stop it? And that takes a lot of effort. It takes a lot of strategy. It takes a lot of tough conversations. It takes a lot of healing, Robert. You know, I think that this is a trend I've noticed, like in the activism community, is, you know, a lot of activists will point fingers at other activists and say, well, what are you doing about this? And what are you doing about that? And we need to remove that mindset, because not everybody can do something about every single thing. We need to be very strategic. We need to say, you know, well, this person is gifted in speaking, so they're going to be the spokesperson. This person is gifted in writing, you know, in grant writing, and so they're going to write our grants, so we make sure we have resources to do these programs. And so we can't just expect every single person to be out boots on the ground. Everybody has their gifts and their strengths that are given to them from Creator, and we need to be strategic about that, and we need to be positive about that. We need to shift from these unhealed toxic negative mindsets. We need to support our youth and these younger generations and younger leaders coming up. There's a lot of gatekeeping that happens, and so all of these things like need to be addressed. They need to be addressed like within community, without the finger pointing, because when the finger pointing happens and the blaming happens, there's no real positive solution that comes out of that. And so at IPM, we really try to center ourselves around people, around our elders, around individuals, organizations that have that positive mindset, that are solution driven, that have a vision for the future that they're making, you know, tangible steps towards. And then how do we as IPM do our piece to fit into that, whether it's the community building, whether it's advocacy, whether it's a protest or a march or a ceremony, you know, how can we fit into that piece?
You know, I really appreciate you bringing that up. And we tiptoe sometimes around what we call, people, like you said, gatekeeping and being negative towards each other. And we need to call that out in a good way and be a good example. Mm-hmm. I just ignore it because you can't butter the right side of the bread for a lot of people. And a lot of them aren't doing anything. Your boots on the ground, your husband's boots on the ground, and those people aren't healed. So if I look at it in that way, I can move forward and keep on doing what I'm doing, whether it's the radio show or whether it is going boots on the ground. And so,
and that's your part, Robert. You know, I mean, like look at all of this news and information that you spread across the world, across Indian country, just from doing this show. You know what I mean? Like, then that's just one piece of what you do. And then, you know, all the work you've done with youth and kids over the years, like everybody has their part. And I think it's also important to remember that, like, we do need to hold each other accountable, you know, but we need to do it in a way that, you know, like, don't make a Facebook post about the person. Sit down, you know, give tobacco. Like, if you need somebody to help you with something, offer them tobacco, you know. Mm-hmm. You need to honor those ways and set that intention, like that positive energy in our interactions. And I think that we just get caught up in emotions. And yeah, because these are like very tense issues. These are issues that our people are dying, and you know, it's serious. It's very serious things. And so we get caught up in that, and then we forget to do, you know, our relational conversations, you know, and that's part of our power, is our connection to each other. You know, and if people want to have a toxic mindset, you know, or, you know, they are not open to healing, that's on them. You know what I mean? Like, we can't take that personally. We just have to continue to move on and do better, so our next generations have a better mindset. We need to set that example.
Well, I know you do, and I know your husband does, and I know your family does, and it is the next generation. You have a little one, and you have stepkids, and I have grandkids, and it's not about us anymore, is it? It's about the future generations, as our elders talked about, the next seven generations.
Mm-hmm. You know, and some of these issues, like, you know, we talk about like sobriety, you know, the drug and alcohol epidemic, the fentanyl epidemic, and people are like overwhelmed. They're like, how are we going to stop something like that? But I would say that anything is possible. You know, we can't forget that, like, when we come together as Indigenous people and we come together in a good way, we come together in prayer with good intention, with good hearts, good minds, and we really do the work. We do the damn work, Robert. Like, yeah, nothing is impossible. And I mean, Leonard Peltier being free after nearly 50 years of incarceration is a testament to that.
Yes.
You know, like, you never give up. You can never give up. You can never give. Don't ever give up on yourself. Don't ever give up on your family, your children, and do not ever give up on your people, because nothing is ever a lost cause.
Well, you know, Rachel, great words as always. I want to just talk a little bit, because I know you're a little tired, and we're going to have Dr. Stately on next, but I wanted to bring up that some of the work you're doing with the youth, and one of it is a podcast over at KFGI. I was really happy to be able to see that go on and have a few of them on as guests at KFAI when I was on. And maybe you have a little update. Is just another leg of your work.
Sure. So this year at IPM, we took on two interns from Indigenous Peoples Task Force through their intern program. And the whole focus of their internship with IPM is to produce and film and publish a podcast for IPM. And so the interns have named it Sage in the City. And each episode is going to focus on an issue that is present here in community, but also is like present across Indian country. And so they're going to look at, you know, how that issue is being addressed here locally within this community, and then also nationally. And so they just finished filming their very first intro episode. And so stay tuned. It'll be coming soon on, you know, all of the different platforms, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Facebook, YouTube. So we're really excited about that. It's called Sage in the City.
I like that name better than Native Roots Radio, darn it.
They came up with it. All credit to our youth.
No doubt. Well, a big Pini Gigi, if anyone wants to donate or find out more about your organization, Indigenous Protectors Movement, is there a place where we can land?
Yeah, for sure. So we're on Facebook, Indigenous Protector Movement. We're on Instagram, Indigenous Protector Movement. On Facebook, there's a link, like a button right there. You can donate. We also have a website, indigenousprotectormovement.com.
Hello, this is Debbie G, Operations Manager here at KFAI. Well, you might recognize my name. It isn't often that you hear my voice. Congress recently passed a bill that eliminates all federal funding for stations like ours. That loss could ripple through the work that we do every day, supporting new media makers, preserving cultures, and giving space to stories, music, and communities that commercial outlets leave behind. We are where we need to be, and that means not backing down. But we need your help to stay strong. KFAI is more than a budget line. We're radical access to the airwaves. If KFAI has meant something to you, now's the time to show your support. Start a monthly gift today or deepen your support if you've already contributed. Give now at kfai.org. We're here for the long haul, and we're grateful that you are too.
Peggy Flanagan, and you are listening to Native Roots Radio.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, welcome back, everyone. Hey, we are here with our friend, Dr. Stately. And Dr. Stately is, and I wrote this down so I get it right, CEO of Native American Community Clinic. Welcome, Dr. Stately. Hey, always great to see you. Thank you so much for spending time with us.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for not confusing me with Robert Pilot. I mean, Robert, the other Robert.
Robert Blake. No,
Robert,
wait.
No, the other Robert.
Wait, Lilligren. Oh, yeah.
Lilligren, yeah.
Yeah, right. Well, believe you me, it works Nasty. Both ways. And when we were doing started doing 5 days a week, it was touch and go there for me there on Clinic and Development Institute. Yeah. Hey, Dr. Stately, I just got to mention this. We just had Rachel Dion Thunder on Indigenous Protectors Movement. And my goodness, the future looks bright when we talk to leaders like that.
Yeah, no, it's really wonderful. You know what makes me – so I spent my morning doing a bunch of other things, but I also spent most of my day in a meeting with several folks from several different organizations across the Twin Cities here, but specifically a couple of them that, like us, work in the cultural corridor here. And you know, we're part of this group called the Birthing Justice Collaborative, right, or collective, and we are working specifically on the initiative to create the American Indian Birthing Center in the Twin Cities.
Wow.
Right. And I didn't know this at the time that we were starting that process, but apparently there is not another Native American Indian owned and operated birthing center in the United States, the contiguous United States. And that we would be the first one. So the effort and the work that goes into developing this thing as part of our collaborative is really challenging, right? Of course, it's hard to do something when there's not a model for it already. But just sitting in that space today with people and spending time talking about all of the different things that all of our partnering organizations do already in this space and all the things that we have, ideas we have for advancing maternal and child health through this birthing center. And it just was like I had this moment where I was like, looked around the room and I was like, this must be what it felt like to be, some of our elders from the generation before me, like my mom, mm-hmm. Clyde, all these folks that sort of like helped create a uh-huh. few things, right? Sat around and talked about the issues in our community and the challenges that we had around, health disparities, mortality, all the things, all the violence and all these other things that they were confronted with. It's many of the same things that we are still struggling with at different times here in the Twin Cities now, right? Mm-hmm. But I was like, at the end of the meeting, I was like, this is what it must have been. It felt like where we were like spending time ideating and talking about all of the things that we had and talking about the answers we already had in our own community.
Wow.
And how we would go to legislature and how we go to these philanthropy and we go to these places to ask for the support to let us just do the work that we already know how to do. So it was like just a really beautiful day for me. I was like, wow. And so when I see Rachel, I see her husband, Vinny, and a bunch of other young people in our community doing amazing things, I just feel really inspired. I was like, you know, we're doing the work that the generation before us did and the generation before them did, you know, this, mm-hmm. this work that we're carrying forward. And our responsibility is to do this work in the best way we possibly can and then hand it off to the next generation.
Right.
So that in two or three or four generations, it's still there. It's bigger or even brighter or better. And then that's the work that we have to do as Native people in our communities is to hold that work and carry the work forward from one generation to the next, pass it on, give it legs, support it, support the young people doing it. And I'm really proud and happy for Rachel and all of those folks who are stepping into those spaces. And you know, I'm closer to the end of my career than I am at the beginning, and she's starting. And I'm really proud that she's doing that work. So pretty cool.
Yeah, very cool. I remember Madonna, Thunderhawk. There was a lull in the time where activism was really happening, and then Standing Rock hit, and it really built her up again. I mean, she's in her 80s now, and she's been involved with everything, but she was like, for a while there, where is everybody? And now, you know, that they talked about the seven fires, and I really believe that, and I've seen it, I've experienced it myself personally from Standing Rock, that all these good things are happening in our youth are, you know, I just have nothing but positive feelings too, Dr. Stately.
Yeah. I feel like, you know, when I'm in those spaces and I'm having conversations with those young people who are really, you know, stepping into those difficult moments and those spaces and, you know, navigating that space with, you know, leadership. Even if they've never done it before, then they're like asking elders for advice and they're like, you know, taking that advice and they're sort of like working strategically to do those things. It makes me feel hopeful, you know, There was like a few moments over the last few years where I didn't feel all that hopeful. But
right. And I think that's what Madonna was talking about, too. And now we see it, you know, the language and, you know, we talked about a lot with, you know, we had the boarding school issues and they were trying to get rid of us. And some of the way to deal with that would be to just, I don't want to say be colonized, but fit in and not for the protection of your children. And I think now this generation's really popped up in the last two generations, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a lot to be said for, like, you know, that strategy for surviving, right?
Yeah.
I remember one of my most difficult conversations with my mother when I was young was a conversation I had with her when I was upset with her. I was angry with her. We were having some challenging times and, you know, in my teenage years at 16, 17, 18 kind of a thing. And I was mad and I was pissed about something. And, you know, and one of the things our fight was about, she sent me and my older siblings to boarding school when I was 5 years old. And, you know, I asked her, like, you know, why did you do that? Why did you make that decision? Did you know? And I think I was mad at her, and you know, she had a few drinks, and we were arguing. And I said, you know, did you know what those people did to me there? And you know, and she had a moment where she was crying, and we had that thing, and I'll never forget the impact of that conversation on me. She goes, well, I didn't have a choice. You know, child protection was going to take you all away from me. And I knew that, and this is 1965 or 66. So, you know, what she knew is that, like, families that were taken away from their parents, children that were taken away from their parents. They were put into, you know, dispersed and put in different homes, and those families never saw, a lot of them never saw their children again, or their siblings again, right?
Right.
And so, you know, I mean, I remember when she said that, it was like a pile of bricks fell on top of me, where I was like, oh gosh, you know, I'm being a little bit of an a-hole here and attacking her. You know, those conversations I would have with her, like, why didn't you teach us their language? Why didn't you teach us these things, right? And she was like, well, you know, my parents, my grandparents encouraged us not to do that, right? And that was the legacy of those generations of boarding school survivors and attendees that went before me, my mom, my grandparents, my great grandparents.
Yeah.
We were encouraged not to do it. So
it's interesting with my family, which was a large family, my Gaga, my grandma, took one of her sons, my uncles, my Daga, everywhere she went when it came to powwows and all that, but just one out of the 11. He isn't a gatekeeper, but he has knowledge whenever I want to know anything about the family or so there. Mm-hmm. She did do that.
Yeah. You know, I think one of the things that I remember my mom having really like intentional conversations with us about like, you know, you take care of each other. You and your siblings are the only thing you have is each other, like this, you know, so that relationship, those relationships are like the most important ones to protect. And I just remember like, you know, those conversations from a very young age. And those are still conversations that stay in my head. I have these conversations now with my own sons. You know, they have their little bloody wars that they have sometimes where they get upset with each other. Like, you know, who pulls more girls from, you know, whatever social they're on or whatever. And they're having little wars about it. And I'm like, hey, like, you can't fight with each other about this. Like, you're all the other person has, really. If I was gone tomorrow, you'd be this guy would be your only and deepest and longest friend and confidant that you would have in your life.
Right.
You have to treasure that relationship.
Amazing.
Not saying you can't be mad at him. Like, you just can't like hit each other, or punch each other, or, you know, talk disparagingly about each other. It's just not, you know, not something we do.
Yeah. And it's interesting. We have to teach our young ones, and it's really gotten in my face right now because I have a grandson and a granddaughter that are
one year
old now, and you think about things like that, you know.
My son's turned 18 a couple months ago, and you know, I just think about like where I was when I was their age, and I look around and I think about all of the things that weren't here when I was 18.
Yeah.
That are here now, and all of the things that our generation, the generation before us, and the generation before us, before that generation, built for their beneficence, right? And,
yeah.
And I talk to them about that. I'm like, you have a responsibility to continue this for your children and grandchildren.
Well, I'm sure you've been a great example. Hey, we're here with Dr. Stately and Native American Community Clinic President and CEO, and we'll be right back after this short break.
We are a Lucent Nation. We are a Lucent Nation.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, in this portion of the show, we like to bring awareness to our Minnesota and Wisconsin wolf population. Just say no to the wolves. Oh!
Oh!
No to the wolf hunt, I meant to say. Oh, we would say yes to the wolves.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was going to say, you don't say no to the wolves.
Yeah, well.
Granny said no to the wolves. Look what happened to her.
Oh, gee. Wow. Yeah. That's heavy. That was heavy. Yeah. You know, we're here with Dr. Stately, CEO of Native American Community Clinic here in Minneapolis in the Twin Cities. And we always have a interesting conversation. And I think with the first guest, it kind of started out because we really talked about, you know, lateral oppression and also people's. Mm. Working and working for the good of the community and keeping an eye on the prize, basically. And that sometimes is hard to do.
Yeah, it sure is. Well, there's a lot to be distracted by out there. You know, there's a lot going on in the world, and there's a lot even going on in our community that can distract you, you know. I'm not going to lie. I like to watch a good, funny or spicy TikTok or, you know, Instagram reel, you know, I can enjoy that, but, but I try not to do it for hours on end. In fact, I'm really, really bad at social media. People are always like, I left you a message on TikTok or I left you a message on Instagram or Facebook. Like a month ago, and you still haven't responded. I was like, well, yeah, I'm busy. So anyway. the people who really need to talk to me have my phone number.
Right. And then and you have the choice to respond or not.
Oh, yeah. But I was like just thinking, like, you know, we live in a world where, like, that certainly is a big, huge thing, right? It's like, you know, all the things that we can be distracted by. And it does pull our attention away from the things that matter a lot. But, you know, which is why we have elders, right? Which is why we have, like, you know, elders like you.
A baby elder?
A baby elder. I don't know. You're not really a baby elder. Are you going to be 64 soon?
65. And May. Yeah. I already am 64. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So you're gonna be 65 soon, right? And you know,
another year.
Behind. I'm on your hot on your heels. A couple years behind you.
I'm recovery too, which is funny.
Huh?
I say you're sober too, just a few years behind me too, which is
funny. Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of strange, I guess. Did you get sober at 23? Like I did.
Yes, I did. Yes, I did.
Yeah, I got sober at 23. And so I was telling somebody the other day, like, how, like, I'm like, well, I'm in my 60s. They're like, you don't look 60. I was like, well, you're used to looking at people who are, you know, ridden hard and put away wet.
Yeah.
I haven't done that in a really long time, so I can kind of pass. But but I think that's the thing is, like, I've been deep in this space because I'm going to give a talk tomorrow. At this at an NIEA gathering, National Indian Education Association gathering, I've been asked to talk about my experience about growing up in Minneapolis. Mm. You know, during the 60s, 70s, and 80s, during the time when, you know, there was like this big, you know, when the big, huge renaissance was happening, the revival of the Native culture and language and history.
Survival schools
and things like that. And just like to talk about like what it was like to live here in this space and place and be a young person growing up and watching all of this unfold before me, right? Mm-hmm. And how that sort of informs like my worldview of things and how, you know, and, you know, it was like, you know, I had to carve my own way too. I was born and raised in a community of, like, you know, activists, and, you know, mm-hmm. I had loud and angry aunties at the tables of my dinners and things like that, long before there was Instagram and TikToks, right? Yeah. And so, you know, those are the things that shaped who I was most of my entire life, because, you know, my mom and many of my extended family members, both men and women, were really deeply involved in, you know, the early shaping and the cultivating and the growing of American Indian movement. You know, the Belcourt brothers were my uncles through marriage and through, you know, I was involved in their lives. They lived, my uncle Les Belcourt and my aunt lived across the driveway from us for most of our lives. And I had, you know, Clyde and his, and Vernon's children were my cousins, and I spent lots of time with them. And Dennis and my aunt Jeanette had children, and I grew up with those. So I was like, I'm going through Dick Bancroft's book, and I'm reading about some of the stuff, and trying to just kind of remember what I was like during that period of time, and center my mind there. And I'm thinking about how, like, you know, when I was a little kid, I didn't really know what the hell they were up to. You know, they were just my uncles, and they were just, like, you know, and it was, and, you know, Pat Bellinger and all these other people, they were just my aunties. They were just like, you know, people I would see regularly at my house. And
why does Clyde have a bullet hole in his chest?
I don't remember that, but, you know. But yeah, holy, they just look just indigenous as F. You know. And I was also looking through, like, a you know, that Dick Bancroft book, We Are Still Here, which is, you know, his photo history of the following Indian American Indian movement. And I saw a picture of my sister's husband, Gabriel Horn. He was my teacher in high school for English and a couple of other classes, but he was also a teacher at the Red Schoolhouse, which I ended up working at later in my life too. So,
wow.
It was like one of these. So it was just like, I was going down this memory lane about, like, my early childhood and my early adolescence here in Minneapolis and how all that shaped who I was. You know, they moved away from here when I was 23 years old and lived on the West Coast for, you know, 18 years before I came back, or 19 years before I came back. Wow. I come back and the place is a lot different, but it's also same. Right. Same in the sense that, like, you know, we have all these things that are going on in our community. We have, like, this huge plethora of organizations and people and movements happening within our community that you know, have sprung forth of, like, from that primordial ooze that our ancestors in a generation or two have given right here in Minneapolis. It's like, this is a place of innovation and indigenous resistance. And, like, that's baked into my blood. That's, like, baked into my DNA. And so it's just a really wonderful place to be. I'm really proud that I'm really happy I came home, and I'm raising my kids here in this space, because I want them to understand how important it is to continue that work long into the future.
It's so interesting, and that's what Rachel and I were talking about in the beginning of the show too. Yeah, and geez, you know, all the bars are gone from Franklin Avenue, but we still have. Yeah. I mean, that was.
Who would have thought that would have ever happened, right? You know, exactly. I went to every one of those bars, actually, with a fake ID, I might add.
I think I got beat up in one of those bars, but that's a whole different story. But I was kind of mouthy. I know it's hard to believe. Hey, we only got 30 seconds left. Dr. Stately, a big peeny geeky, thank you so much for coming on. And, you know, as always, it's always a pleasure here at Native Roots Radio, and people look forward to hearing from you. So thank you so much.
You take care. Keep going, and have a great evening.
Right on. Hey, this is Native Roots Radio. If you're listening to the show, you are part of the resistance. We're still here. We are the seventh generation.
What's up? This is Toolman.
And this is Bear Witness.
And we are the Hallucination.
And you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, Best of.
I'm Lady J, and this is my invitation to you to join KFAI for the second annual Blues Cruise. We'll be cruising and bluesing on Friday, August 29th at 7 o'clock p.m., leaving out of the Watergate Marina in St. Paul. Music by the Bambi Alexandra Blues Review. It's a fundraiser for KFAI, so your dollars will count twice as much. You'll pay your pledge and party with the Minnesota Blues Challenge winner. For more information, go to kfai.org/bluescruise.
We're two of the very first listeners, and we're
still listening to Native Roots Radio.
Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. Hey, we have Wendy Pilot on. She is our sacred animal portion of the show. Wendy's been on for many years. She's a co-founder of Native Roots Radio, and we're always great to it's always great to have you on. If I could talk, you're welcome.
Thanks, Robert. In this portion of the show, we'd like to bring awareness to our Minnesota wolf population. Say no to the hunts.
No.
Hey, everybody. My name is Hanaji Hihani, and that means cares for them. And I was given that name by my Dega Curtis. Curtis goes by Mashke Hanajinga, which means walks on white clouds. I'm a humane policy volunteer for Humane World for Animals, formerly known as the Humane Society of the United States. And I work on animal issues at the local and state level. It's always my pleasure to do that. So,
Easy to say, too. Mm-hmm.
That's what you think.
Yeah.
A couple of things here today. Reminder, a car ride with the windows down is a great enrichment for anxious and reactive dogs.
Oh.
Yeah. So if you have an anxious or a reactive dog, get them in the car, put the window down and let them, like, the air fly in the air and let them smell all the smells.
Aren't all dogs reactional?
I don't think so. No, we have a reactionary dog.
We have always had a reactionary
dog. I know. We've never had a normal one, have we? There's plenty of dogs that walk down the street and are fine. They don't bark at people. They don't bark at other dogs. They're calm. Mm. We see them all the time. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. It's fine. I mean, we just, Wanda's great. We love her.
Oh, she is.
And it's funny, there's an article here that I'm trying to bring up. I have a subscription to the Washington Post and I saved this article. But now, of course, the firewall comes up, the paywall comes up and I'm signing in, but I can't remember my password. But anyway, the article, I'll just do what I could remember about reading it.
Mm-hmm.
It's from the Washington Post. It was just the other day. Why skipping your dog's walk is a bigger deal than you think. And this is from the Washington Post. And it really talked
guilt
about
coming my way.
It is guilt. Yeah. Because, it talked about this, these people whose landlord put a fence in their backyard and they were really happy about it because they were like, oh, great. Now I could just let my dog go out and pee and come back in the house. But then they, the people felt guilty because they weren't getting the dog out for its regular walk, and it really talked about how getting your dog exercise is really important. But the most important thing is to let your dog look around at its environment and sniff.
Wow.
Sniffing is like totally so important for their behavior, their emotional well-being, their stress levels, and just letting them sniff. Now, sometimes Wanda will stop and sniff and she'll sniff and sniff. I'm just like, okay, she's got a good smell. And I kind of leave her. I really do.
You've trained me to, too.
I will just leave her because I know that, she's really having a great time sniffing whatever she's smelling. And then sometimes she rolls around in it and I'm like, oh, geez, what the heck is that? But anyway, just let your dog sniff. It's really, really good. I read another article. It wasn't this particular one, but another one. And it was just like letting your dog just like sniff around is like, it's like a mile walk for them, you know, the excitement that they feel and everything. Yeah.
And you schooled me on that. And that's, I always make sure that I let our four-legged relatives sniff now.
Yeah. Well, I know, like, when we walk, a lot of times we'll see people pulling their dog, you know, not letting them sniff. Yeah. I mean, we don't know if they've already been out on an hour walk and the dog sniffed a million things and they have to get back home. But, you know, I don't know. Yeah. Listen to this one. I love this. In Japan.
You are listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI, 90.3 FM, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and around the world at KFAI.org, non-commercial, community-powered radio.
Oh, it's bursting with ultrasonic.
Gin and tonic, please.
Oh, it's bursting with ultrasonic.
Gin and tonic.
Oh, it's...